So this is another really problem. Well, how did the states operate as agents? That's worth exploring for just a minute. They supplied the Continental Congress with revenue, and they had certain rights under the Articles that were enforced in state courts, but these rarely tended to be resolved. So there was some kind of obligatory relationship. Okay. Weakness number four. There was no real mechanism in the Articles to determine who's in charge. Spheres of influence. Who's in charge at a particular time, in a particular way? Who has authority in this particular situation? When you have Article II and power residing in the states, you had kind of an inevitable and perpetual dispute about the realms of authority. Problem number five, the lack of an executive. There's not an executive, and there's no executive unity of the executives who are eventually appointed. You need an executive to administer the government, to be the person who executes the laws. But they really don't have one until the very end of the time of the Articles of Confederation. They set up this kind of committee, and we have these presidents, but it's still a major problem. Well, they make decisions, and it's a very good question, and we're going to kind of look at that in a few minutes, kind of the advantages of the Articles. I mean, this is a very loose organization, the Continental Congress. People come, people go, states are represented, and they're represented kind of, as Calhoun argued, kind of as ambassadors. It's kind of a meeting of ambassadors, which is a little bit problematic in itself. These are people who don't serve long periods of time and have a long kind of connection with the Continental Congress itself. So that's a good question. We're going to turn to kind of the advantages in just a minute. A sixth weakness is the difficulty in passing legislation. When we think of passing legislation in a Congress or Parliament today, what kind of percentage do we think of necessary to pass? A majority vote. What's a majority? 51 or 50 plus 1, however you count it. Under the Articles of Confederation, how many states are there? 13. To pass any piece of legislation, you needed 9 votes. Now, in political science, we call that an extra majority. You needed not a majority, not a slight majority, you needed a special or extra majority. 9 out of 13. That's a lot of votes. You needed that much of a majority to pass any provision. Okay, closely related to that, weakness number 7. To amend or to add articles to the Articles of Confederation, let's say if you want to add one extra or several extra, it had to be more than a 9/13 vote. It had to be a unanimous vote of all states to amend it or to add articles on to the Articles of Confederation. To change the document, if you want to, and I think we should think of the Articles of Confederation as really the first American Constitution. To change it, you had to have a unanimous vote. Even in the late 1770s and early 1780s, unanimity, complete agreement is very difficult. Especially when you had different states, different interests, different agendas. It was very, very difficult. We have a very almost impossible political environment. This will lead to many people pleading, crying, begging for some kind of change. Having said this, and looking at all these weaknesses that are very often articulated, it's fair that we give the Articles their due and look at the advantages, the benefits of the Articles of Confederation as a central American document, as a central political document. Now, there's a popular country western song that says, "This is my story and I'm sticking to it." Anybody heard that song? Probably not. If you haven't, yes, okay. Sort of my argument has been in Calhoun and Popular Rule and in other places that I'm having to live with. My argument about the advantages of the Articles of Confederation is it gives us an eye view of kind of the natural, organic nature of the Union. The Union as being a highly diffused political order, where power is shared among different elements in that Union. That's been an argument that I have been making that may come back to haunt me someday, as many of my activities are coming back to haunt me as I grow old. But that's one, it sort of sets up that organic nature of the Union, which I think is one of the advantages of the Articles. There's some other advantages of the Articles. I think probably the most general, in some ways the most exciting, when people are beating up on the Articles of Confederation, giving it, just raking it over the proverbial coals of intellectual inquiry, saying, it deserves to be in the dustbins of history. I'm reminded of a statement made by a friend of mine by the name of Ross Lentz, who is the editor of Union and Liberty, which is one of the texts for this class. Ross teaches at the University of Houston, and we were in a forum one time, and somebody was really beating up on the Articles of Confederation, and Ross Lentz is a very small fellow from Wyoming. People from Wyoming are always dangerous. You got to watch them. And he's a sort of a small fellow, but very very articulate. All of a sudden, he hit the table and he said, just remember, on the Articles of Confederation, we won a war. It's one thing to consider. We won the war for independence, operating under the Articles of Confederation. So we need to keep that in mind as well. Also, as kind of a third category of why I think the Articles are important, is that a number of provisions in the Constitution of 1787 are first elucidated, first mentioned in the Articles of Confederation. The extradition of fugitives. If you have a diffused political system, if somebody commits a crime in one area and then they go to some other area to escape it, they need to be able to be brought to justice. We have that provision in the U.S. Constitution, and it comes directly from the Articles of Confederation, where it's first mentioned. Secondly, this idea of full faith and credit. It will make its way as Article 4 in the Constitution of 1787. But we have it in the Articles of Confederation that each of the colonies have to give the other, they have to treat the other's laws with respect. Therefore, if Krista makes a journey from Massachusetts to Virginia with a 6-horse carriage, she shouldn't be, and it's okay to have a 6-horse carriage in Massachusetts, she should not be arrested in Maryland where the limit is 5 horses a carriage. That Maryland has to respect the laws of Massachusetts. That full faith and credit for one law state are given credit in another's. And in many ways it is. This is still a source of concern in American constitutional law today. A lot of debate over this very clause, which will make its way into the Constitution of 1787, as I mentioned, as Article 4. Okay. A third sort of lesson is that the inhabitants of every state are entitled to the privileges and immunities of free citizens in the several states. Again, this is Article 5, that they're also allowed certain kind of liberties and protection. This is an important provision as well. And so we have here in the Articles of Confederation kind of a design for a constitutional republic with a lot of benefits. Now, in the final analysis, in many ways, the Articles are fundamentally sound. It's a fundamentally sound document. Government's given power. The Articles are supreme law in relationship to a national judiciary, and they have an amendment process. The Articles could have worked, and they did for a short period of time. But there are some actual failures as well. One failure is that they didn't represent American interests in the war in many regards, because American soldiers sometimes went without resources because they're dependent on basically on the state to provide them. So you had American troops in wilderness areas without the kind of support they needed. Serious, serious problem. You've got a difficulty in negotiating commercial treaties with other countries because, you know, states are basically in charge of the negotiation of economic arrangements. And you can imagine this presented a great problem for the Continental Congress. Also, you have tremendous disputes within the states over currency, inflation of the currency. And you have things like Shays' Rebellion, people just standing up, raising havoc over this kind of the issuance of paper money. Shays' Rebellion really for inflationary, on the behalf of inflationary legislation. The colonies are in a very weak environment, having just emerged from this great conflict. Where we'll be turning in the next lecture will be towards the need for some kind of constitutional reform. But I want to mention and want us to reflect on kind of the enduring importance of the Articles as a lesson about American democracy and American political life.